Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
To second for one. The relay to first for two. Nicely turned over.
The play that was so nice, we played it twice for you.
That's the only highlight I have.
That's the lone.
Hold on.
What you got?
To second for one. The relay to first for two. Nicely turned over.
There's that little double play for you there. Good job, Tigers.
Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer Lynn Rawlins on the call.
They were on fire last night.
They were on fire. The Tigers, on the other hand, not so much. Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to a hump day edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium 24-Hour Sports Network. You can give us a call today if you'd like on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. 337-706-0111. Tiger fans, I'd love to hear from you today. You were vocal on the Twitter with our poll questions earlier in the week. Be interesting to see what you have to say about your baseball team this morning. That's where we're going to start. 12-1. Defeat to Louisiana Tech in a midweek contest. Logan Robbins, give credit to him, the young man for the Bulldogs. He stepped up and did what he needed to do. He limited the Tigers to just three hits in one run in 6 2/3 innings of work. While the Bulldogs' offense scored in seven different innings to take the 12-1 win over the Tigers Tuesday night inside Alex Box Stadium. LSU drops to 30-19 overall after the defeat. That's the same record as Louisiana Tech. LSU is now 5-5 versus in-state opponents this year. 5-5 with losses to Louisiana Tech, UL, McNeese State, Northwestern State, Southern. This is the team that was ranked number one in the country to start the year, predicted to be in Omaha for the College World Series. Right now, it sure does seem like they're fading down the stretch a little bit. The Tigers have to be back on the road this weekend in Fayetteville, Arkansas, as they take on Pig Suey for a key three-game series. Arkansas leads the SEC West standings. They also are the second-best team overall in the SEC. Lots on the line for LSU this weekend for this road trip. A road trip that will not feature Cole Henry, who's not even making the trip. Who's going to pitch? I do not know. Robbins, as I said, picked up the win. And here's the frustrating thing if you're an LSU fan. It's not as if the Louisiana Tech lefty came out there and just fanned batter after batter. He only allowed three hits in one run in 6 2/3 innings of work. He only struck out two. Only struck out two. freshman Chase Costello. Well, he suffered the loss for the Tigers. He tossed two innings, giving up five hits and four runs, three of which were earned. So what Paul Maneri had to say afterwards. It's unfortunate you have these types of games once in a while. Coming off an emotional game against Ole Miss on Sunday and looking ahead to a big series at Arkansas starting on Thursday, it was just one of those nights when things didn't go well for us. It's a tough night, and I'm hurting for our players and everyone that follows LSU baseball, but it just counts as one game, and we've got to shake it off and get ready to go to Arkansas. That's probably true. I wouldn't deny that. 15-1. 15-1. LSU's on the bubble for hosting a regional, and they just lost a game 12-1. The number 15 ranked team in the country just lost at home to a Louisiana Tech team that does not have a home. Louisiana Tech has not played at home for more than a month. Now, part of that's because of a long road trip, which they have now lost the majority of the games on that road trip. They were ranked in the top 20, and then they suffered losing like 6 of 8, fell out of the top 20 in all the polls. Don't have a home to go back to. Their home stadium has been destroyed by a tornado. So they're vagabonds. And a team that has been woeful at the plate, a team that has suffered loss after loss, just came into Alex Box Stadium and put up 12 on LSU. I understand it's a midweek game, but it sure does feel like we keep talking about that as an excuse for why LSU is struggling. Oh, it's a midweek game. It doesn't matter. Okay. I feel like we said the same thing following Northwestern State and McNeese State losses. I feel like we said the same thing following Southern. Did we not? And there's been hangover from all of those defeats. Were there not? Look at the schedule. There was some type of hangover effect following those losses. They lose to Southern, remember? That following weekend they had the series at Missouri, followed by the midweek game versus UL, which they lost in the Wally Poniff Junior Classic. Then they come out and lose game one against Florida the next weekend. Now they recovered to win that series. But there's a little hangover here. By the way, La Tech with the 12-1 beatdown, and that was an absolute beatdown, snap a 12-game and 32-year losing streak to the Tigers. So not only is LSU fading down the stretch, they allowed Ole Miss to come inside Baton Rouge into Alex Box Stadium and win a weekend series for the first time since 1982. Days later, Louisiana Tech snaps a 12-game losing streak to LSU and snaps a 32-year losing streak to the Tigers. This is a series that's been absolutely dominated by LSU. Here's another little factoid for you. They also scored the most runs versus LSU in at least, because those type of records weren't available last night, the most runs Louisiana Tech has scored versus LSU in at least the last 49 years. That's courtesy of Corey Diaz, our friend from the New Star in Monroe, who covers Louisiana Tech. That's as far back as he could find the information last night. At least 49 years. Could be more. Could be more. The three-game series versus Arkansas begins Thursday. I apologize. Begins Thursday this week. Now, once again, LSU's now 5-5 against in-state foes, having lost four of its past five games against Louisiana schools. To be fair, there's still one more midweek game to go versus an in-state opponent.
There's no way we can cancel that.
No. You may not want to. You ready? We'll give you the silver lining, Cody Schutz, because I know you're a little down this morning. Okay. They have one more midweek game next week against UNO.
Would be only right for Blake Dean to get a win in the box. Makes sense.
If they win, if they beat UNO, they'd be 6-5 against the in-state schools.
Hot damn, over 500. Way to go there, Tigers. I'm talking about.
LSU's national runner-up team in 2017 had a 6-5 record against in-state schools. So, it can be done. And as a team that caught fire in the SEC tournament and then in the NCAA, right, in the regional, super regional, they made that terrific run to the College World Series, ended up finishing as national runner-up to Florida. So, that's something to hang your hat on.
Yay.
That does not help Cody Schutz.
No, until they're 5-6 against in-state schools after this.
My man's already chalking up a loss versus the Privateers.
I'm being very cynical this morning because it's one of those reactions where I know my feelings aren't true because right now I don't even care. But I know that's not how I actually feel. But the combination of how poorly the game was last night and how it is 6:15 in the morning, the combination of those two things, I don't care, at least right now. Give me another hour, and then I'll be pissed in an hour. But right now, LSU baseball, you guys can whatever.
And once again, Cody, the other thing that occurred during last night's game, and we've seen this a couple of times, right? We remember after, what was it? It was after the McNeese State loss. They had the players-only meeting, whatever, in the outfield for a little while. They've had a couple of players-only meetings. They've had these things where they try to speak. Some of the older players try to speak, rally the team. Hey, we got to get focused. We got to get together. We can't just coast. We're just not LSU. We got to prove we're LSU, right? That whole mantra?
Right.
Well, it happened again last night during the game. James Moran, friend of the station, took a picture of the LSU dugout because when you're in the press box, the LSU dugout is to your right, okay? And you can look down right into it. He took a picture of the LSU dugout, and he tweeted this out saying, "The LSU dugout looks empty between innings. Perhaps there's a discussion about the present state of affairs going on in the inner dugout / tunnel." So there was some type of players meeting or coaching staff meeting or something during the game. That didn't help. Should a team that's this talented, should a team that's chalked full with this much firepower, these many guys that are going to be playing at the next level, that are going to be playing through the minor league system, should they be really needing to have in dugout, in tunnel meetings during a late season midweek contest versus Louisiana Tech? Just a question.
There's a leadership problem on this team.
Boy, you don't want to say it, but you did. Because they got good guys, they got older veteran players on that team, but for some reason,
you shouldn't have to call. I will, and I did. Up until this point, you can look past and after a very bad game. If you are the leader of the team, for whatever reason, maybe you did what you could to try to bring the team up and get them ready. And for whatever reason, that particular day, the dugout, you could just tell the energy wasn't right, whatever. Okay, after the game, we need to talk. We can look past that. I can, at least. No big deal. But then to try to call a meeting in the middle of the game with the entire team as if, you know, it's like it's literally flipping a switch and not flipping a switch being the metaphor that it is. to even think that that was like, oh, yeah, let me go yell at my teammates or whatever we do with my teammates, and then we're going to go out there and all of a sudden we're the number one team in the country again. To think that that's how it was going to work, that's a problem in my eyes. If you're a true leader on a team of that caliber, of that high expectations, you should have the guys ready 24/7 to defend that, you know, proverbial title of being just on the LSU baseball team. If you think calling a team meeting in the fifth inning of a game against Louisiana Tech on a Tuesday night is going to make the difference in the season, then, you know, you've had this whole season twisted in your mind to begin with, I think.
It's a valid point. I want to piggyback off that after the break. We'll talk more about LSU baseball and suffering the lopsided defeat last night inside Alex Box Stadium to Louisiana Tech when we come back here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. 24 hours of sports. We led off the show with the 12-1 whooping that occurred inside Alex Box Stadium last night. And the Tigers were the recipient of said whooping behind the tool shed. To further the point that producer extraordinaire Cody Schutz made before, you believe that there's a lack of leadership on this LSU baseball team.
Or maybe a confusion from some of the guys in what leadership is, or the proper way to portray leadership. Because I just think calling a team meeting in the middle of a game in the hall and thinking that was going to, you know, fix it is a little misguided. I don't know. There's better ways and other ways you should be trying to lead your teammates other than let's rally after we're already down by 7 runs.
And I've said this before, Cody. I understand that they had the number one rated recruiting class in the country. A lot of freshman guys have come in and played for them this year, right? CJ Willis, Landon Marceau, okay? But
their starting third baseman wasn't even on the team at one point. Granted, he's a senior and he's older, but he wasn't even on the team at the beginning of the season.
That's correct.
Or at one point.
You have older guys, though. Antoine DePlantis, former Lafayette High Star. Daniel Cabrera, who's a sophomore now. Zach Watson. Zach Hess. Todd Peterson, right? You have all these older players. All those guys, I understand that they had the number one rated recruiting class. And they brought back Eric Walker after missing all of last year, and Josh Smith most all of last year as well, right? Those are two guys that you're dependent on. But this sure does look a lot like last year's team, doesn't it? And the majority of the players that stumbled and disappointed last year and had to rally just to get into an NCAA regional by advancing all the way to the SEC tournament championship game before losing to what, Georgia?
It was Ole Miss, I think.
I could have sworn it was Georgia last year.
We'll find out.
It was one of those teams that wears red. They had to do that just to get in to an NCAA regional, and they were nowhere near hosting it, and they had to go up.
It was Ole Miss.
It was Ole Miss? Yeah. Thank you. So they make the run last year, a disappointing season. They make the run last year to get to the SEC tournament championship game. They fall. That's enough to get them into regional play, and they have to go all the way out to Corvallis.
Against the team that then would
go on to win the national championship. But to be fair, LSU nearly lost to Northwestern State in that regional last year. They were losing in, I want to say, in the eighth or ninth inning. So
we had this drop forever. I want to play the Beavers again. I'm sorry.
Oh, But doesn't this year's team remind you a lot of last year's team, Cody? I know they added the number one rated recruiting class. I get that. And they got the freshman on there. And you get an Eric Walker back after missing last year with injury and Josh Smith back. But Josh Smith has been effective. Eric Walker is not. The makeup of this team, the majority, the core of this team is the same as last year's team. The team that struggled. The team that lost midweek contest. The team that needed to make a run in the SEC tournament just to get into an NCAA regional. Is it possible that media folks and people that follow college baseball maybe overlooked last year and just thought, oh, Eric Walker, Josh Smith back in the number one rated recruiting class? Well, LSU should be number one, number two in the country.
I have never heard of the media doing that in any way, shape, form, or fashion ever, and I don't understand why you would insinuate that that would happen. I'm slightly offended.
And here's the other thing about dealing with those expectations. Vanderbilt sure doesn't seem like they've had a trouble dealing with the expectations.
You're going to piss me off, Raymond.
In preseason, of all the preseason publications, right, there's five major ones for college baseball.
Right.
It was either LSU or Vanderbilt as the number one team.
Facts.
Number one, number two is those two teams. Vanderbilt's dealt with it. They're the best team in the SEC.
Yep.
So that argument, well, you know, not dealing with your LSU. You've brought this up before on this show, and I agree with you. It doesn't matter who you're playing. It doesn't matter if you're playing a team that you should curb stomp or that's going to be on equal footing. You wear the purple and gold. You go out there, and when you step on the field at Alex Box Stadium, you should be the better team, period. LSU's not the better team. I think it's time to have a come-to-baby-Jesus meeting with ourselves, the media and LSU fans going, this is a team that's borderline NCAA regional team. Just saying. When we come back, Raging Cajun softball talk right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network.
Fun fact, Raymond.
Yes.
This technically doesn't count as interrupting sports talk with non-sports talk because you haven't started the sports talk yet. this song, do you recognize this song?
It's in Living Color.
It is. Cult of Personality.
Yes, it is.
Yesterday, or all this week, actually, on Stadium Network, where you can watch us live right now, channel 32.1, KXKW, after we go off the air, we are followed by two guys, Sauce and Schramm, right? We think we've brought them up before.
Yes.
This week, Schramm is still there. Sauce is the one that's out this week. His guest host filling in for him is the one, CM Punk, Chick Magnet Punk. We all know him from WWE fame, UFC fame. This was his entrance song in WWE.
Nice.
He was one of those few guys that got, like, an actual song.
And it wasn't a produced song.
Right, it wasn't
by the composer.
Like Ronda Rousey gets bad reputation.
Right.
Like, he had Cult of Personality play him out. And I just want to mention CM Punk. He brought on Jack Swagger yesterday to talk to as well. It's pretty cool. So if you have Stadium Network, you should watch RP3 and Company, and then don't change the channel and watch CM Punk talk sports. It's crazy. And he's a Cubs fan, so I like him even more.
Outstanding. I just learned something new, that CM actually stood for Chick Magnet. I never knew
that. Well, that's the whole thing. It never really stood for anything. He says growing up, he was just a kid that liked punk rock.
Okay.
And the CM, he said he just went with it, and then all of a sudden people started creating things for him. Chick Magnet, because he... Chick Magnet, championship material, other type things they were saying CM stood for. But the real reason he went with CM is because his wrestling career started as a tag team. When I say started, he kind of hit the map in a tag team with another guy, and the tag team was called the Chick Magnets. So then he broke off to his solo career, he wanted his last name to be Punk, and, you know, went with his first name because he wanted everybody to call him Punk. You can't just have your name be Punk. Okay. So CM Punk, Chick Magnet Punk. And that's like now like his, it's not his legal name, but he like sued WWE over the rights.
It's not his
rights.
Legal name. It's not his government name.
Right, his government name is Phil Brooks, if we're going to break kayfabe completely. Yes, he is just that white guy named Phil Brooks, yes. But no, he like went to court over the rights to the name CM Punk, and he beat WWE. It's crazy, it's weird, all that. But there you go, your little CM Punk lesson for the day. You can catch him on Stadium after RP3 and Company.
That's right, after us here on 103.7 The Game. We led off the show talking about LSU struggling, not living up to their expectations this season on the diamond. Well, I'll tell you a team that has not had that problem, and that's the University of Louisiana Raging Cajun softball team. The regular season champions, they are the number one seed for the Sun Belt Tournament, which has already begun there in San Marcos. They're ranked in the top 10 nationally. They have the most wins ever in Sun Belt history. They're 25-0. And yesterday, the conference gave out their season awards. And the ladies at UL, well, they did very, very well. UL placed a league-high 9 individuals on the 2019 All-Sun Belt Conference team and nearly posted a clean sweep of the major awards handed out by the conference office on Tuesday. Alyssa Dalton, she was named the Sun Belt Player of the Year. Summer Ellison, former Turlings Catholic star, was named Sun Belt Pitcher of the Year. It's the 12th time in program history that the Raging Cajuns have swept both awards and the first time since 2016. Sarah Huddick captured the Sun Belt Newcomer of the Year award in her debut season with the Raging Cajuns. And head coach Jerry Glasgow, meanwhile, was bestowed the Sun Belt Coach of the Year award after guiding UL to a 47-4 regular season mark, 25-0 in Sun Belt play, regular season championship. Only the second undefeated conference mark in program and Sun Belt history, and a top 10 national ranking. UL's actually climbed in both polls. They're now number 7, the number 7 ranked team in the country. Dalton, Ellison, and Huddick were joined on the All-Sun Belt first team by Lexi Como, utility player. You can read more about Lexi later today. Just go to the 103.7 The Game blogs. Go under RP3 blogs. I will have a story on Lexi posted later this afternoon. Also on the first team with Dalton, Ellison, and Huddick, Lexi Como, as I said, Keely Milligan. She's the Texas A&M transfer, stolen base record, and Julie Rawls. Dalton and Ellison were first team selections for the second straight season, but the Raging Cajuns were not done. Sisters Kara and Courtney Grimion, along with Raina O'Neill, were selected to the All-Sun Belt second team. The eldest Grimion, that would be Kara, third baseman, collected an All-Sun Belt award for the third consecutive season. UL's 9 all-conference selections mark the second most in program history, trailing only the 10 that were collected in the 2002 season and the 2005 seasons, and increased the program's all-time Sun Belt selections total to 137. Dalton, who was named the Newcomer of the Year, picked up a major award for the second straight season. She played a key role in Louisiana's ascension to the top of the league into the nation's top 10. She batted .494 with 11 multi-hit games since middle of March. In conference play, she held team highs in average with .417, hits 30, and runs scored 23. Ellison, who we've talked about a lot on this program, and deservingly so. This is her stat line for the regular season. 34-4. 34-4. Summer Ellison has more wins by herself than the LSU baseball team does combined. Just pointing that out. Summer's 34-4 overall. Her ERA is 0.98, and she has struck out 303 batters this year. She also leads the nation in wins and is one of only five pitchers nationwide entering postseason play this week with a sub-1 earned run average. She's pretty good. Hudik, meanwhile, is the league's leader in total bases with 100. She also has a team-high 22 extra base hits, which includes a career best this year, 10 home runs. Como, who has played multiple positions, she was the starting catcher the last few years for the Raging Cajuns. They asked her to make room because they were bringing in Julie Rawls. So Lexi has played some at catcher while Julie has learned the position. Lexi's been their designated hitter. She's even played first base, left field, right field. They always keep Lexi in the lineup somehow, so they just move her around. She's learned how to play multiple positions, kind of a true team player type of player. She totaled a team high, tying 23 runs batted in. Lexi did. Milligan, by the way, as we talked about before in the show, set the new school and Sun Belt record with 57 stolen bases. She finished the regular season very strong, the former Texas A&M star, by hitting .458 and swiping 22 stolen bases since March 31st. Rawls, meanwhile, as I said before, is a converted outfielder to catcher. Posted a team high tying 10 home runs, team leading 49 runs batted in, and had 16 multi-hit games. The Grimion sisters, Kara, who's been manning third base, one of the best defensive players, defensive infielders in all the Sun Belt. She led UL with 11 doubles. She only had 6 errors over 139 chances during the season. And her younger sister, Courtney, posted half of her season hits and RBI totals and the bulk of her home run production during league play. And in her debut season with the Raging Cajuns, O'Neill produced a career-high 51 hits, reaching the 50 plateau for the first time, and is on pace for a second double-digit home run season and the first career 300-plus average of her career. UL will start Sun Belt Conference Tournament play at Bobcat Stadium in San Marcos beginning tomorrow at 12:30. They do not know who they're playing yet because they are the one seed, so they're letting other teams battle it out. So what we're saying is the UL softball team is really, 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 really good. Really, 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 really good.
And I don't think it's just really good for the Sun Belt. I mean, it's just really good in general.
In general. Really good in general. It'll be interesting to see what happens with them come Sunday.
I mean, what
Sunday is Selection Sunday for the NCAA Regionals for softball.
Let's say because they're right now number 7 in the country. Let's say they host.
But that's not their RPI.
I understand.
That's the thing.
I understand. Let's say that they host a regional, but are not in contention from the outset to host a super regional if they win. I know crazy things can happen if a bunch of low seeds win. Maybe somehow, you know, a super regional can fall to you. But let's say, for hypothetical reasons, the Cajuns host a regional and then win that, and then don't host or wouldn't host a super regional if they did win their regional. What would you say, where do expectations sit this year for the Cajuns? Because we've seen this team be great in past seasons, very recent past seasons, as a matter of fact, but not quite be able to get over the hump, whether it's the Sooners and Norman or whatever the case is, not quite get.
UCLA is going to be.
Can they get to Oklahoma City is my question. Is that the expectation we have, or is a hope?
I think it's the expectation they have.
Correct. Good
okay,
call. Good
Jerry
call.
Klasko and his staff, that's the expectation they have, and that's the expectation those players have. I don't think they felt that they could make it to Oklahoma City last year with everything that occurred, with the firing of Michael Lotief as the head coach, the fallout of that, the PR nightmare that that became. You had three players, including two All-Americans, transfer out. You had starting pitcher leave and your two best hitters. Okay, and they all transferred to Pac-12 schools. Yet they still found a way to advance to the Sun Belt Conference Tournament championship game. They fell a little bit short, and they still got into an NCAA regional where they lost. Okay, I think last year they exceeded expectations. This year they're a totally different team. They can hit for power. They can steal more bases. They're more dynamic offensively because they've now had a full year under Glasgow in the, what his hitting style, because that's what he's known for. He's known as a hitting coach. That's what he was at Texas A&M and at Georgia beforehand. And those teams made it to the College World Series a total of three times between them while Jerry was on staff. The expectation is to get there. The problem for them is where they're ranked. You would want to avoid the mammoth that is Oklahoma.
Yeah, that seems to happen.
Okay. So let's say UL, based on their record and knowing in the NCAA, knowing, hey, we know we're going to sell out at Lamson Park, right? We know that's going to happen. And they have a good enough record, and they're going to have over 50 wins or whatever it may be. Let's let them host a regional. More than likely, UL would win that regional. But then, because they would be one of the lowest-ranked teams hosting a regional, that would put them playing one of the top three seeds, more than likely, in the super regional round, which means you're facing Oklahoma, UCLA, Washington, or Alabama, depending on how the rankings pan out. So, Raging Cajun fans have to make a decision here. They're not in charge of the decision, but what would you rather have? Would you rather have UL host a regional and then have to play in Oklahoma, UCLA, Washington in a super regional and make your path to get to Oklahoma City even that more daunting? Or would you prefer to be the two seed, Cody, in a regional, not host, and go beat one of those teams and then get a more favorable matchup in the super regional round and have a quote-unquote easier path to get to Oklahoma City?
So the thought process being, instead of being the eighth or the 16th seed, you would be the 25th seed or 24th seed, which in that turn, if you can win from there, would instead of playing, like you said, a top, I mean, I don't know. I'm always a big proponent of postseason sports, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, field hockey, doesn't matter. I want to play at home. I don't know.
And the home crowd is such an advantage for the Cajuns, okay?
Looking ahead, I'll put it to, here we go. Here's how I can make myself feel okay with, I would rather see the Cajuns get a home regional because no matter what, yeah, getting to Oklahoma City is great, but the overall goal is to win the national championship. If you're going to win the national championship, odds are you're going to have to beat Oklahoma. You're going to have to beat UCLA. You're going to have to beat someone.
But the argument the other way is, wouldn't you want UCLA and Oklahoma have to worry about themselves over there, and you can get to Oklahoma City and you're not going to have to face both of those teams? Maybe you have to face one, and maybe one of those other power teams gets upset, or maybe you get to Oklahoma City and then you can pull off the upset yourself. But I guess the thing is, do you want to host the regional, win the regional in front of your home crowd one last time? Because they did have to end the regular season on the road at ULM, and then they have to go to San Marcos for the conference tournament. Lovely San Marcos, Texas. That's what I've been told. And then go on the road. You know, and with LSU losing to Alabama over the weekend, what happens with the SEC tournament is going to have a direct impact on what happens with UL and their placement. Because Bama's now number four. Okay? You know, they're number four. LSU is now ranked below UL in the polls, not the rankings. You know what I'm saying? Not the official rankings that determine.
Do they go by RPI as well in softball? I know that's what baseball goes by.
Yes, they do. They do an RPI situation. Now I'm looking here at like Hero Sports softball rankings. Oklahoma, UCLA, Arizona, Washington are your top four.
Heard that before.
UL 16, LSU 17.
Well, that's a regional, right? I mean, it's the same format as baseball, correct?
Yes, and UL has the second longest winning streak in the country with 24 wins. Longest? Oklahoma with 40. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. We have to have conference tournaments kind of let the dust settle, and then selection show will be Sunday night at 8 o'clock. So UL will find out its fate Sunday night once the conference tournaments are all in the books. So hopefully the Raging Cajuns will come back home with a conference championship in tow and then find out their fate, whether they're going to be hosting the regional right here in Lafayette or if they're going to have to go on the road. Either way, this team looks prepared to make a run to Oklahoma City. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll close out the first hour on 103.7 The Game.
Target of mercy, did it! He did it! Mike fires for the second time in his career, has thrown a no-hitter. Tonight he no-hits the Cincinnati Reds.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. That's right, Mike Fiers threw a no-hitter last night. It's the first no-hitter of this Major League Baseball season. It's the second no-hitter of his career, the 13th in Oakland A's history, which is an odd thing. And for the second year in a row, an A's pitcher threw the first no-hitter of the season. Now, as you remember, Fiers is a former Houston Astro pitcher. His first no-hitter came back in 2015 when he was still pitching with the Milwaukee Brewers. In between, he pitched for the Astros. Here's the quirky thing about the first no-hitter of the Major League Baseball season by Mike Fiers last night. He threw 131 pitches to complete the no-hitter last night. This game was delayed for like an hour and a half due to lightning. And he still went out there and pitched the no-hitter. The 131 pitches is the most since Mike Fiers threw 134 in his last no-no back in 2015. So Mike Fiers loves to go the distance for his no-hitters. So congratulations to Mike Fiers, former Houston Astro, getting his second career no-hitter.
300th no-hitter in MLB history.
Thank you, Cody. I'd written that down and forgot to bring it up. That's why you're the producer. Keeping me honest. First hour's in the books. Second hour coming up. Kerrick Johnson, head coach of Southern baseball team, is going to join us right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me, thanks, draft this year, and they're looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that belt.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also, simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline this morning for our first guest. He is the head coach of the Southern University Jaguars baseball team. He's led the Jaguars this season to not only a victory over LSU, who was ranked top 10 in the country at the time, he's also led them to an SWAC Western Division title and the top overall seed in this week's SWAC baseball tournament held down there at Wesley Barrow Stadium in New Orleans. He's a former assistant coach at the University of Missouri and Nicholls State, just to name a few, and a former Major League Baseball agent. It's our privilege to welcome to the program Coach Kerrick Jackson. Coach, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Raymond. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Let's talk a little bit, Coach, about the great turnaround that the Jags have experienced this year under your watch. How were you able to turn things around so quickly and kind of incorporate what you wanted to do with the program and to have this great turnaround season like you're having?
You know, I think our main focus was changing the culture and getting the kids to understand how this game is played and to get them to go out and play it the right way. You know, last year when I got in there, the one thing I was able to assess was that we have a lot of athletic ability all over the field, but we just didn't have that baseball IQ that we needed to have to be successful. And so what we did was we spent a lot of time getting our guys to understand the disciplines and responsibilities that are required to be successful in the game and how they should go about their business. And so in doing that, that allowed us to put us in a position to go out and be better this year.
Coach, you know, you guys went last year. It was a struggle last year. Very much well under 500. What did you learn about your team and about the program, and more importantly, what you needed to do last season while you guys were going through those struggles to be able to get your team where it is today?
The one thing that they showed me last year was that there's some fight and there's some grit in there. Like you said, we were 9-33. We were 15 of our 33 losses were two runs or less. We got walked off six times. I told everybody last year, I told them this year, I think last year we might have been the best 7-8 team in the country. You know, the problem was we played 9 of the games. And so just being able to get them to focus. And we had some really quality games last year. You know, Mississippi State, who makes it to Omaha last year, we're at their place, and it's nothing in the seventh. And we end up losing that game. The same thing with Southern Miss. And so I think that the fact that we fought all year long, even down to the end, to our very last game of the season last year against Jackson State, I believe, and we lost 3-2. So I knew that they had some fight in them. And then now just being able to show them how to go out and be better earlier in the games. And the biggest change we had, too, was we were able to add some guys to the back end of the bullpen that helped us when we got to those positions that we knew we could finish games if we did have the lead.
We're talking to Southern baseball head coach Kerrick Jackson. His team is 28-21 overall this year, 18-6 in the SWAC. They wrap up the regular season tonight as they take on Alcorn State on the road. And then, Coach, obviously the conference tournament will be next weekend down at Wesley Barrow Stadium. You already know your first round. You already know your first opponent, Arkansas Pine Bluff, which will be next Wednesday at 6 p.m. Coach, let's talk a little bit about you guys clinched the SWAC Western Division title, and then you already lock up the number one overall seed for the conference tournament, and you did that early this past weekend. How great was that for you guys to be able to accomplish that before the end of the regular season? Go ahead and hit those milestones with still games to play.
You know, it was good. Those are some things that we talked about at the beginning of the year that we wanted to accomplish as a team, and we looked at some of those things. As one was going out and being competitive this year and having a mindset to go out and play cleaner games, you know, working every day to be better than we were the day before, and doing that, not necessarily focusing on win totals, but knocking off, like you said, some of those milestones, being competitive, playing a better game, winning the West, and then putting ourselves in a position to go into the tournament regardless of what our seed was. To win that tournament and ultimately get to a regional with the ultimate goal, as I talked about on day one, of getting to Omaha. And so the fact that we're able to take some of those steps and get to that point here in year two shows that what we're capable of doing. I think it shows our kids what we're capable of doing when we're focused and we get after it the right way.
We're talking with second-year head coach of the Southern baseball program, Kerrick Jackson. here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on RP3 and Company. Coach, let's go back to April. You had yourself a game that got a lot of notice. I'm sure you realize that now. You probably didn't know it back then. The big deal with taking on LSU, you guys were able to host them there at your place at Lee Hines Field. The atmosphere was electric. You even had people standing out by the road, by the overpass and everything like that, watching the game. What did it mean to you to have a top 10 team come and play you guys at your place and then for you guys to get a win over LSU?
You know, I think any time that you can get a team of their caliber to come in and play at home, it's always a good thing. And then when you add to that, that's the team is just, you know, 15 minutes south of us. You know, both of us being in Baton Rouge, team in the SEC. It was a great environment, as you mentioned, and it was a good win for us. And you know, the message that I delivered to our kids before the game started was, listen, you're on national TV. You got a chance to play against a team that's ranked in the top 10 in the country. You got a chance to play against a team that's one of the better teams in the SEC with the goals that we have in mind. The only thing I want you to focus on tonight is I want you to go out and earn respect, and I want you to have fun. Don't worry about anything else but doing those two things. And that's what we're able to accomplish, and I think that's why we came out with the win. And the plus for us was it's not one of those situations where our kids look back at it and, oh, LSU didn't play well. No, we happened to just play a good game against them and a good quality baseball game. We threw strikes. We played defense. We had some timely hitting. We ran the bases well. We were aggressive. And it put us in a position to walk out of there with a win.
Coach, I want to talk a little bit about your background. I know you played junior college ball, is that correct, before going to Bethune Cookman and then finishing out at Nebraska?
Yes.
So your experience there as a player playing at the multiple levels there for junior college, then in for an HBCU, and then all the way up into playing for a Big 12 school at that time, you know, what was your experience like as a player moving up the levels like you did during your collegiate career?
You know, it was a good one because, you know, coming out of high school in St. Louis, you know, being an outfielder with some arm strength, I had an opportunity to go to junior college and be a two-way guy while I was at Merrimack Community College, which at the time was one of the top junior colleges in the Midwest. My last year there, we went to the JUCO World Series and finished third. And then I went, like you said, transferred to Bethune-Cookman. And while I was there at Bethune-Cookman, we won the first conference championship in the school's history. And made it to postseason play, NCAA postseason play for the first time. And then, like I said, going on in Nebraska. And necessarily, Nebraska wasn't the best team that we had there, but it was going into the Big 12 and being in those environments and playing against the Texases and Texas Tucks and Baylor and, you know, all those kind of things. And so all that experience, I think, it helped me be the coach that I am because you saw levels, all the different levels of baseball there. And then when you add in there the different things I've done coaching-wise and the different places I've been, it gives you a great perspective on how things should be and being around a bunch of different really, really quality head coaches and good baseball minds to allow me to come in and form my own mentality and thought process when it comes to that. You know, one thing I tell everybody is as an assistant coach, I was the best head coach in the country. I knew it all. I had all the answers. And then come and you sit in the seat. And you realize some of those things that that head coaches deal with that as assistants you don't even realize. So it put me in a position where it humbles you very, very quickly. And I called every head coach I've worked for and told them that I have a greater sense of respect for what they did as head coaches now being in this position.
We're speaking with Southern head baseball coach Carrick Jackson here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on RP3 and Company. Coach, you know, you served as an assistant for a few seasons at Nicholls State down in Thibodaux, and you also spent 5 seasons there at the University of Missouri. So you got some Southland experience under your belt. You got some SEC experience, or at that time would have been Big 12 experience under your belt. What did you learn from being an assistant coach on both of those levels? Because there's a big difference between the Southland Conference and then a Power 5 Conference. I'm assuming the lessons learned at both of those stops have helped you as a head coach. What were those lessons that you learned from a Power 5 school and from a team in the Southland?
Well, you know, I think when you talk about being in the South and specifically being in Louisiana, it was very similar to the situation that I came in here. You know, the head coach there, his name is Chip Durham, and he brought me in because we were competing against each other when I was at Jefferson College, which is a junior college in Missouri, and he was the head coach at Crowder College. And he told me he wanted me to come in and be in charge of recruiting. And so when I came in here, I hit the ground running and basically spread our message and how we wanted to go about things. And the mentality for me was, you know, there wasn't a player that was too good. I hit it running and went out and got in everybody's living room that I possibly could, even guys that were going to be, you know, go to LSU and all these places, but I was going to make them tell me no. When you talk about the style of play, everybody in the Southland Conference had, at that time, their frontline players were pretty good players, and the difference between them and some of the bigger schools was the depth. So you understand that and you try and recreate that depth in those situations. And then, as you said, the transition to Missouri and going there and being in my first 2 years there, we were in the Big 12, won a Big 12 championship, back-to-back championship games, 11 and 12, and then we transitioned into the SEC. And so even the style of play from the Big 12 to the SEC was different. In the Big 12, it's a situation where you had quality frontline starters at that time, and then you had closers. There weren't really the bridge guys that there were in the SEC. In our first year in the SEC, when we got in there, you go to the Vanderbilts, you go to the Floridas of the world, and they're running out a dude on Friday night who's 94 to 96 miles an hour and plus breaking ball and good change and command of all three pitches. And you're thinking, oh, man, this is legit. Let's wear them down, because that was the idea in the Big 12, get pitch counts up and get to the bullpen before they get to their closer. Well, in the SEC, you better get your runs off the guy that's starting, because once they start going to the pen, now everybody they're running out of there is 93 to 95, and they're coming in for one inning.
Right.
And so then it was a philosophy shift from a recruiting standpoint at Missouri, where as soon as I saw that in year one, I immediately went out and said, listen, we need to be better at the back end of the bullpen. And you saw that those games were won or lost in the sixth through the ninth inning. And so we made that change. And in 2015, we won 15 games in the SEC. We won 6 out of 10 weekends. We were ranked as high as 12th in the country. And we were the first team in the history of the SEC to win 15 games and not make a regional. And it was because of some of the games that we lost in our non-conference schedule. And then when you fast forward to coming here and seeing what we had here, pitching and defense wins. No matter what the conference is, no matter what the level is, that's always going to be what you need to do. And we didn't have the pitching here. We spent some time last year, and my focus last year was saying, listen, we have to be better on the mound. We have to have guys that are going to throw strikes, that are going to give us a chance, that are going to go out there and be competitive. And so I still have that same philosophy here. We're going to build the bullpen from the back forward and not go out and try and find, hey, let's go out and try and find that Friday night guy. Well, everybody wants that guy. We may have to develop that guy in our system, but if you can get you some young guys that can go out and give you 5 or 6 innings, but you recruit from the back forward and know that, hey, if you get me to the 6, we can shut this thing on the back down on the back end. It's not only a recipe for us to be successful in the conference, but we're recruiting to win regionals. We're not recruiting to win the SWAC. If we recruit to win the SWAC, then we get to a regional, we have no chance. If we recruit to win a regional, then we should do well in the SWAC and not want to get to a regional. We're prepared and hopefully be that first HBCU to go to Omaha.
Coach, you spent time as a big league agent. What kind of lessons did you learn from that experience that's helped you maybe as a head coach and as a recruiter?
I think when you combine the time that I spent with Forest Corp, as well as the time that I spent as a Midwest area scouting supervisor with the Washington Nationals, you talk about evaluating players and going out and seeing what guys can and can't do. I think on the Forest Corp side of things, you're going out, you're looking for the best of the best. But at the same time, you're still evaluating. There's some projection that has to be put into place there. And whenever you're talking about projection or you're talking about forecasting, if you will, when the human element is involved, there's always that bit of unpredictability. You can see a guy that's the best of the best, and then all of a sudden he gets underneath those lights and he's somebody different, and you don't know that. So what it did for me was you want to know who the player is as a person. because that's going to tell you a lot about whether or not their tools and their skill set is going to allow them to maintain that level of success when they get to a high level. And again, like I said, we're going to miss on some guys when it comes to that. But I think it helped me be able to go out and continue to dig deeper into who these players are, as opposed to just recruiting talent. For us, we have to recruit people, and we have to recruit the right people. And then their talent, we're interested in because they have ability, but they have to be the right people. And on the pro side, they got to be really, really talented. And as we all know, you see in the news, there's a lot of really talented pro players in all kinds of sports that aren't the best people, but their talent allows them to be successful. And if it's good enough, it's going to allow people to overlook some of the things that they do. And if it's not good enough, then they're not going to last very long. But that's our philosophy is, hey, get quality people that have ability and we'll have champions.
Well, wrapping it up here with Kerrick Jackson, the Southern Baseball head coach here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on RP3 and Company. Coach, I'll get you out with this. You guys have had a tremendous season. But I have to ask, you know, was there any trepidation on your part on coming in and replacing an iconic coach? You know, Roger Cador won 14 SWAC titles, made the NCAA tournament 11 times, won two black national titles, and having coached the first Golden Spikes Award winner to have played at a predominantly black school in Ricky Weeks Jr. The resume speaks for itself. He's an icon not only in the state, but across HBCUs in this country. Any trepidation whatsoever of coming into a situation replacing a legend like you did?
You know, I think one of the things, the statements I've always made since I've been coaching is you never want to be the man after the man. You always want to be that second guy because the man after the man has those shoes to fill and will always be compared to what was immediately before him. But at the same time, the reason why I was attracted to Southern University was because of the things that Coach Cador was able to do here and show that they could compete on a national level. And so for me, the excitement about not only getting them back to where we used to be, but taking it to another level is what was intriguing to me about the program. And I'll never fill a shoe. I mean, the reality is, like you said, he was here for 33 years and did some powerful things. The nature of the game has changed so much that I think we will always be competitive. I think we will. I want to put ourselves in a position where we're looked at as being one of the top programs in the country. But with the way that college baseball is now and the other programs that are in place that are as competitive as well, that dominance that he had going 45 and some odd, you know, 45 and 5 and beating everybody. It wasn't just SWAC schools that they're beating. When Ricky Weeks and those guys are here, they were handing it to everybody. We want to be competitive in that situation. I don't know if we'll be able to get ourselves in a position where we'll get back to being that dominant as those teams were in that you know, late 90s to early 2000s. But I definitely think we'll be competitive, and I definitely think we can put ourselves in a position to be mentioned as one of the top baseball programs in the country.
Well, Coach, appreciate you making some time for us. Congratulations on the terrific turnaround season. Congrats on winning the SWAC Western Division Championship and as well as earning the top seed for the tournament. And good luck to you and the Jags the next week down there in New Orleans.
Hey, Raymond, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
That's Southern baseball head coach Kerrick Jackson joining us. Big shoes to fill walking into that situation. Roger Cador is being inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame this summer. The man's an icon. But you could tell Kerrick Jackson, the former ball player himself, competitive guy. He's accepted the challenge there at Southern. They have great baseball tradition, and he's helped turn around the program, and they are headed in the right direction. Look like a team that's trying to make themselves get into an NCAA regional. So good luck to him and the Jaguars. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Houston Astros played a game last night. Kinda. We'll talk about it. Here on 103.7 The Game.
2-1. Bregman drives this one deep to left center field. Gordon is looking up, and you can kiss that one goodbye. Off the community leader signs for Bregman, his 10th home run of the year, and it's 8-1 Kansas City.
That was one of the few highlights from last night's game between the Houston Astros and the Kansas City Royals, or as Pulp Fiction would say, Royals. The Royals beat the Astros 12-2. It was an absolute beatdown. KC hit two grand slams. But what I want to focus on quickly is not the loss, because these happen throughout the season, is what the hell's going on with Colin McHugh? He's supposed to be the number three guy in this rotation behind Verlander. And through his first four starts, he's one of the club's best starters. 23 innings pitched, only 5 earned runs. His last four, 18 innings, 24 earned runs. His ERA now for the season is 6.37. Verlander, Gerrit Cole, and then was supposed to be Colin McHugh. What's going on with them, with McHugh? What are the Astros going to do if McHugh cannot step up and be that number three starter for this rotation moving forward? Be interesting to see what happens there. When we come back, more LSU baseball talk right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. We led off today's show about the disappointing outing last night at Alex Box Stadium for the LSU Tigers as they fell 12-1 to the visiting Louisiana Tech Bulldogs. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and talk to the man, the voice of the LSU Tigers, the one and only Chris Blair. Chris, how are you this morning?
I'm good, man. The good news is the sun did come up.
The sun did come up, my friend. The sun did come up. Let's talk. Look, let's just start over. They've struggled with midweek opponents this year. It's just that's how it's been. Losses to now Tech, to Southern, Northwestern State, and McNeese. But, you know, if they turn it around this weekend and win the series at Arkansas, who's leading the SEC West and is second overall in the SEC standings, the ship is kind of righted, so to speak. For you, as someone who's been watching him up close and personal for the majority of the season, Chris, any concerns with what you saw last night at Alex Box Stadium for this ball club moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, you got to be a little concerned, maybe even more so, just simply based on where you are in the season and based on where your record is. And there has to be a sense of urgency. And, you know, we can always have that argument, or how important are midweek games? Are they important? It seems to me when you win them, they become important. When you lose them, they're not. But
fair point.
The fact of the matter is, I mean, you come off an emotional, disappointing loss on Sunday against a longtime rival at Ole Miss. Again, most of that game, you're getting your doors blown off. You're down by 9 runs at one point, down by 6 going into the bottom of the ninth, and you know, you see something that you don't normally see. You know, they get 2 quick outs and then 3 singles and 3 home runs, and next thing you know, it's a tie ball game. But they unfortunately lose there in the top of the 10th inning. And you know, you kind of wonder what kind of, you know, hangover effect will that be? I mean, you have Monday, which the guys had off at practice, they needed that required day off, and then they come back and play a very good Louisiana Tech team last night and just really didn't see a whole lot of emotion, didn't see a lot of fire, certainly didn't see a sense of urgency. And, you know, you felt like, you know, whether or not you win or lose the game, but to just be dominated in that fashion, out hit 17-4, losing by double-digit runs. I mean, you put all that together and then realize you got to get on a plane today and head to Arkansas to take on a Razorback team that arguably is, you know, if not the best, one of the best in the SEC. They're sitting atop the SEC West where they have, you know, most of the season, certainly since the midway point. They've got a great team. And, you know, I don't know if the urgency picks up a notch when you arrive in Fayetteville later tonight, but it's going to have to. It's going to be a long weekend at Baum Stadium. I mean, they can smell blood in the water. It's a big series for Arkansas. It always is. LSU under Coach Palminteri has had their number. I mean, winning 12 of 13 meetings series-wise since Coach has been here, which is pretty impressive. And, you know, there's been a lot of times where on paper Arkansas probably had the better team is still unable to win the series. But you better be ready, and you better have a sense of urgency, because I can tell you Arkansas has been circling this one for a while. And, you know, they remember 2 years ago kind of dominating, looked like they were going to really take that series. And LSU just miraculously able to take two wins and get out of Fayetteville with a series victory. And then, I mean, you go back to the Rally Possum game 3 years ago yesterday. I mean, they've had some tough luck have the Razorbacks. And I can tell you, they're ready for payback. And LSU's got to be ready for it.
We're talking to Chris Blair. He's the voice of the LSU Tigers. Chris, I made this point earlier, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. I know people, the expectations, preseason expectations are number one, number two ranked team in the country. Definitely should just go ahead and punch their ticket and go ahead and book the hotel room for Omaha. But this is a team that last year had an up-and-down season, had to put together a run to make it to the NCAA regional with that great run that they had in the SEC tournament when they ended up losing to Ole Miss in the championship game. You know, the majority of this year's team is last year's team. And I think maybe people were, I don't know, assuming a little too much, just thinking, well, Eric's back and Josh is back and we got the number one recruiting class and it's just all going to come together. It's just going to happen like magic. And that's not how a baseball team comes together, and that's not how a program is built that way. It's just not an easy fix. Are we just seeing a little bit of maybe, you know, an up and down team, and this is what the team was last year, right?
Yeah, I mean, you would think, you know, I think a lot of the hope was that you're going to see, you know, an improvement in everybody's game, and I'm not so sure individually that you haven't. But you're right. I mean, you're looking at the key guys coming into this season, especially in the lineup and out on the field, and then you feel like, well, you're getting Eric Walker back. You got Zach Hess back. You've added the number one recruiting class. I mean, you ought to be able to just roll the helmets out there and pick up wins. And obviously, that's not how the game works. LSU has a bullseye on their back, whether they're preseason number one or not ranked. I mean, that's just the fact. Their history and their legendary program speaks for itself, and that's why you've got to be ready to play. And, you know, I think that's what's kind of befuddled fans and has frustrated them quite a bit, as I think you simply looked at the Tigers on paper and say, well, they did this last year, and that'll be able to do that and then some. And that's just not how it works. You know, I think this team right now is going to have to look at each other in that locker room and figure out who's going to, you know, be the vocal leader. I'm not so sure that we've seen that person arrive. You know, there's been leadership at different times, but you haven't had the true end, start to finish leader that kind of stands out on this squad. But somebody's going to have to shake them up a little bit, because, again, at some point, you got to go out and play. You got to go out and perform, and you got to have a little bit of fire to you. And I think that was what was most disappointing last night, and a little bit on Saturday in Game Two against Ole Miss. It was just, you know, not a lot of emotion. You know, you saw it on Friday night, probably the most we'd seen in a game all season long, in that 8-3 victory. But it's just kind of a fleeting moment and didn't last. And so far, they still haven't been able to find it this week, and they're going to need it starting tomorrow night, because I can tell you, as I mentioned, and I can't stress it enough, Arkansas is lying in wait. I've talked to some people up there. They think this is the series that, you know, they've been circling. They expected to play LSU, and, of course, they thought they had a good team. LSU was coming in preseason ranked number one or number two, so they've been looking forward to this one, and they're not going to take any pity whatsoever on who's injured, who's not in the lineup. As far as they know, they're taking on LSU. And again, I just think it comes down to somebody having to step up in that locker room and, you know, saying, guys, we got to get concerned about, you know, the purple and gold we're wearing and what we represent and the teams before us and the coaches before us and the coaching staff that have poured in these hours trying to get us ready to play. At some point, between the lines, inside the diamond, you got to get it done.
We're talking with Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers, on the ARCO Equipment Hotline here on RP3 and Company. Chris, to that point, I know last night during the game, I want to say it was around maybe the fifth or sixth inning, you know, some reporters noticed that the dugout was empty and looked like there was having some type of meeting in between the innings there for the Tigers. And I think that's a moment where they're trying to get leadership together. They just, a lot of the veteran players like Antoine Duplantis, or even like a Zach Watson, these are kind of mild-mannered guys. They're not very vocal, rah-rah, fiery personalities. Is that what's maybe missing, is that they don't have a kind of like very vocal, fired up guy that can light a fire underneath the team and get them all to be more consistent?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's, you know, leadership comes in a number of ways. Sometimes guys lead by example, by the way they play, not necessarily just being the rah-rah type of guy. And I think that, you know, they've had that. And Antoine Duplantis is one of those guys that, you know, again, he's not going to be up in anybody's face and firing guys up. He just goes out and does his work and sometimes really can light a fire with what he's doing in the field and at the plate. And I think sometimes when you get in this situation where you've had, you know, some setbacks and you feel like you're starting to get, you know, in the right direction and then, you know, the bottom falls out again, that sometimes it does take that vocal leader. Now, we saw Clay Moffitt earlier this season kind of direct a team meeting in right field after a tough loss during the midweek to McNeese State. And again, Clay Moffitt does all he can do. He's a relief pitcher. But, you know, again, you're kind of looking for some of the other guys, the everyday lineup guys to kind of provide that a little bit. But, you know, in the same sense, I've been around teams enough, I've been around coaches enough, that you can't manufacture it. I mean, it just has to come naturally. So,
right, it can't be fake.
Again, you can't fake it, and you can't just try to force yourself to be that guy. But sometimes circumstances will bring that out of somebody. And, you know, I don't know if LSU's had their back to the wall like this in quite a while, with just six games remaining in SEC play, seven games overall, trying to at least maybe host a regional. It's not out of the realm of possibility, but the time is certainly in the sand, starting to tick out of the hourglass a little bit. So, again, maybe we'll see somebody rise to the top, and maybe they started last night. As you pointed out, we certainly noticed it on the broadcast. I think it was the bottom of the fifth before it started. They were in the tunnel, and you couldn't see them down in the dugout. So, again, they got down pretty big and just unable to overcome it last night. But hopefully maybe they'll get something to start a fire here before they take on Arkansas tomorrow night.
Chris, it was announced earlier, Paul announced that Henry will not be able to go. He won't be able to pitch. He's not even making the trip to Arkansas. Do you anticipate him coming back for the Auburn series or the SEC tournament?
No, that's all that we can go on at the moment. Again, you know, talking to the staff and listening to what they told the media on Monday was simply that, you know, they don't have anything they can pinpoint as to what the injury is other than arm soreness. And, you know, when you get to that point, it's kind of like the old high ankle sprain. You know, it could be a week, it could be 4 weeks. There's just really no way to know. There's no doctor that can literally say he'll be ready to go in 4 days or 5 days. So it's kind of day to day and week to week. I don't think they've scratched him, obviously, for the Auburn series, and they'd love to have him back. So it's just one of those deals where, you know, it's unfortunate you do not have him this weekend, because arguably he's been the best starting pitcher, especially in conference play this season. And, you know, it's unfortunate for him because he really started to come into his own and became, you know, a kind of a guy nobody wanted to see on the mound. So, you know, without him, it certainly, you know, shorthands what LSU can do, especially from a starting pitching standpoint. But as Coach told me Monday night on his radio show, it's just one of those deals where nobody has a crystal ball and can look in and find out when he'll be ready to go. They just have to talk to him, see how he feels, and his body tells him if he's ready to go or not. Hopefully he'll be back, because he's something to watch, and he could be a big asset in this final run in the regular season.
We're talking with Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on RP3 and Company. Chris, does that mean that Hilliard's going to get the game one start for this series?
Yeah, we expect so. I mean, that's what he mentioned on Monday. Is that the rotation? He mentioned it again last night in the postgame comments with Bill Frankes on the radio. Was, you know, that's who they got right now. It's Mikhail Hilliard on Friday. Zach Kess will remain in the bullpen. They'll go with Eric Walker on Saturday, and obviously Landon Marceau. Well, I should say Thursday, Friday, and then Marceau on Saturday. So that's what they've got. So, and, you know, barring they make a change and possibly bring Zach Hess back to the starting rotation, which, again, as of last night, was not the plan. But we'll wait and see. You know, something tells me that we'll see Mikhail Hilliard start the game tomorrow night and then have Zach Hess ready to go. And, again, Zach went four innings last week on Friday night, you know, over 55 pitches. We thought maybe we'd see him possibly last night, but I think because the game was pretty much in hand, they felt like they could give him an extra day of rest. And they're going to need max effort on every pitch, which is what he did last Friday. And if he comes in and out of the bullpen against a very good hitting Arkansas team, he's going to have to throw with maximum velocity again.
Chris, we'll wrap it up with this. I know expectations are high for the LSU baseball program. They always are. And I know fans are a little restless right now, the purple and gold. And they're, you know, you start hearing these people talk about Paul Maneri. I think that's premature. I think the expectations are so high at LSU, and I think people don't realize, and this is my opinion, that the Gorilla Ball era where LSU won five national championships under Skip does not exist anymore in college baseball. And that's just not how the game is played anymore. And teams dominating like LSU did in the 90s to the early 2000s doesn't exist anymore either. It's just a lot more parity in college baseball. When you hear people complain about Paul and that, you know, he's not doing a good job, what do you say to that?
Well, it's a completely different era. I mean, there's a number of reasons. Number one, the scholarship limits, limit how you go out and build a team. I mean, you got to have pitchers and you got to have starters and you got to have guys in the bullpen. And to get guys to come on campus with so many players coming out looking for Division I scholarships and you've only got a handful you can do so, you can't just put a bunch of big boppers in the lineup because then you got nobody who can pitch. So those scholarship limits are really, to me, the biggest standout difference in this area of college baseball. On top of that, you mentioned Gorilla Ball. I mean, well, the bats certainly were changed a number of years ago, and that's made a huge impact, not just on LSU, but the game as a whole. I mean, I was listening earlier this week, and they were talking about a former college great that went on to play in the major leagues, and they said, you know, he had an okay career in college. He didn't stand out. He only had 24 home runs his junior season. And I'm thinking, 24 home runs? My goodness. I mean, that's unheard of these days. So, you know, I think it's just a different era. And, again, I know fans are frustrated. I'm sure nobody's more frustrated than the coaching staff and the players right now. But it's a different era. I mean, you just won't see that type of team that you saw at LSU, and for that matter, at a number of places, for the programs that dominated back during those days. It's just, it's never going to be here again that way, just simply the way the game has changed.
Chris, as always, appreciate you making time for us, brother. Enjoy the trip up to Fayetteville, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
That's Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers, joining us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back here, we will wrap up hour number two. Strong hour, two good guests. College baseball talk out of Baton Rouge, Southern and LSU. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III. Cody Schuetz. It's time for you to shine here at the end of the second hour, my friend.
I'll try.
We need to give the people the results of the poll question that we put up yesterday. We started off the week with a lot of LSU Tiger, enthusiasm, passion for our first Twitter poll question of the week, which was, are you more concerned about the starting rotation or the bullpen for the Tigers? I was overwhelmingly in favor of the rotation being a concern. Yesterday, we asked the question on the air and had you vote on it via the Twitter sphere, or the Twitter book, or the Twitter bookgram, however you want to describe it. I think that's how Bill Belichick would describe it.
Snap face.
The snap face. I love the snap face. FarmersOnly.com. If you believe Paul Maneri should be on the hot seat due to the performance of LSU in recent seasons, including this season, do you believe Paul Maneri, the LSU skipper, should be on the hot seat? Cody, what did the people have to say about that?
121 votes in on this one. Still pretty split down the middle. 57% say yes, 43% say no. So nothing too definitive.
57-43, huh?
Yeah, I'm seeing it.
So 57 feel that he should be on the hot seat.
According to this poll.
Acadiana has spoken.
Mm-hmm.
Acadiana has spoken.
We also have the poll up about the leadership question for LSU baseball. That's up there. If you think LSU baseball has a leadership problem,
that's
whatever,
right.
Whatever that means to you.
Whatever
players,
that means.
Coaches.
That's right. That's right. Whether that means they lack a vocal leader, whether that's leadership from the coaching staff, whatever leadership means to you, listener, we want your thoughts. So please go to the 1037 The Game Twitter account, vote on the poll. Do you believe this year's LSU baseball team has a leadership problem? Vote. Tell your friends to vote. Tell your meemaw to vote. Your meme, your pop, your nephew, whoever else, your neighbor. Go vote. Second hour in the books, Ron Higgins from Tiger Details. I bet you he has an opinion about the LSU baseball team. He's going to share it with us right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidified everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
But it's definitely a boost when, you know, when you look up in the head and you see your mom, see your dad, night in and night out, it's just different. I encourage everybody to be an opportunity to play at home, to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We, of course, are simulcast on KXKW, channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Network, 24 hours of sports coverage.
CM Punk coming up in less than an hour.
Less than an hour, CM Punk. He will not do as well as I do, though, on television.
No, he's funny, though, because he is awkward.
And I have a better chance of getting a shot in the WWE right now than he does.
That is untrue. They would welcome him back with open arms.
Burr.
Ratings are terrible. They would love to have CM Punk back.
We let off today's show talking about LSU baseball. Now, not a lot of good things to talk about. Obviously, when you suffer a 12-1 defeat at home in Alex Box Stadium versus the Bulldogs, who haven't defeated you in the last 12 opportunities, score the most runs they've had in like at least 50 years against LSU. So, not a great look for the LSU baseball team. We also talked about Raging Cajun softball team cleaning up nearly every award for the Sun Belt Conference. Houston Astros struggles with Colin McHugh, who started off so strong to the season and now has kind of slid off the face of the earth. And, of course, we talked with Southern head baseball coach Kerrick Jackson earlier about his team earning the number one seed for the SWAC baseball tournament next week and the great turnaround that he's had there in Baton Rouge. But it's now time for us to head back out to Baton Rouge and talk more LSU baseball with our next guest. He is the acclaimed sports writer / reporter for TigerDetails.com. It's the one and only Ron Higgins. Ron, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Raymond. How are you?
I'm doing great, brother. Well, let's just get right to it, man. Another midweek loss for the Tigers baseball team. This one may have been the worst of them all. A lackluster effort, it appeared, start to finish. They got absolutely punched in the mouth and had no answer. Had to have that meeting in the tunnel before the sixth inning. And that didn't help. What do you make of LSU now after a weekend where they dropped the series to Ole Miss? The Rebels win for the first time in Baton Rouge since 1982, And now they've lost to Louisiana Tech, and they're 5-5 versus in-state opponents this season.
Well, I think basically this team's playing like it wants its season over. And I've never said that about LSU baseball. But it's playing like it wants its season over. When you go out on a game like last night, and I don't care if it's a mid-week game, when you go out there and just don't even give a crap and you show up and get your tail beat like that, see, this team playing like it doesn't have any leadership whatsoever on this team, no spark. It has no dependable pitching. Nobody wants to step up and be a leader for very long. It's hitting folds up against really good against Friday night pitch, against the best pitchers on the staff. This team folds up. So honestly, this team is going to be. I mean, they'll get to the NCAA tournament. It's not going to host a regional now because it keeps losing. And basically, they'll get knocked out in the first round. And then that'll be it. I think maybe the combination of the injuries and pitching. I think Paul Menard seemed a little bit off all year after his after his dad died. I think he hasn't been the same, I understand that. There seems to be a lack of spark or a bit of a sadness about him that I hadn't seen before. And honestly, I just. Last time, the first time I ever thought that I watched LSU baseball, I thought the team just basically quit. And this team's playing like it wants the season over. And yet, it had a great comeback Sunday. That's great. But, you know, you never should be down that much. You know, so that's just this team doesn't play hard until it has to play hard in games. And it puts its back against the wall far too often. So, I mean, honestly, I think this team wants the season over. Sure, it's playing like it right now.
Ron, you and I have talked about this before on air and off air. Is I know the expectations in the preseason were number one, number two to start the year. This team should be going to Omaha. Look at the guys that got drafted that decided to come back. Oh, they're getting Walker back as well. They're getting Josh Smith back, and they got the number one recruiting class. But baseball teams don't gel over a fall camp. Okay, they just don't. They need time. And primarily, the majority of your starters and your contributors on this year's team were the same guys on last year's team that struggled and had an up-and-down season the entire year and had to make that run in the SEC tournament just to get to an NCAA regional where they lost in Corvallis. Could it just be simply just the DNA, the makeup of this group of players that is going on at LSU?
That's one thing, too, yeah. That's and understandably, I mean, I understand they had a ton of injuries pitching-wise. They can't figure out their pitching. But that shouldn't affect your hitting. And with this team, it does. This team, they get behind early because their pitching so it's just garbage. And a lot of times, starting pitching. And then they're bad. They don't do anything with their bats for like five or six innings, and then by that time it's over. And I agree. I had a good nucleus back from last year, and they did struggle. You thought that they would get better, but they didn't get better. And some of the freshmen were hit and miss. A lot of them been hurt. A lot of freshman pitchers have been hurt. It's just, but this hasn't been a good year, and I don't think it's going to get any better. If it gets better, I'll be the first to say I was wrong if it gets better. But at this point, you've got two SEC weekends left, and you haven't gotten better. You're still doing the same things you've done for the past month and a half. Same stuff. I mean, lousy starting pitching, no hitting, can't hit the best pitchers on everybody's staff. Can't hit them. Way too late in games to start playing. We've seen the same thing over and over again. I don't think they'll get past I'll be in last in the SEC tournament, and usually that's where they play really well. I'm telling you, this team acts like it wants a season. It plays like it wants a season over. And I realize that, you know, they lost a tough game, you know, Sunday. I realize that. But he shouldn't come out and get beat 12-1 and act like he doesn't want to be there. Okay? For one thing, final exams, I believe, are over. I mean, it's not like you have to worry about classes. I mean, I believe final exams are over, LSU. Come out by that way, it's inexcusable. And all this stuff about, the same old line here. Well, you know, you just flush a game like that and move on. Well, they're not flushing games and moving on. They're not. If that was true, they would have flushed Sunday and moved on. They're not flushing games.
The losses linger for whatever reason this year, Ron, right? The midweek games, yeah. These losses, they linger. I mean, you look at their schedule, they lost to – they struggled. They lost to Southern. Then they lost at Missouri. They lost against UL in the Wally Pontiff Junior Classic. Then they lost the opener to Florida before bouncing back and winning that series. There tends to be a game after. If they suffer a defeat, it seems to carry over to the next game.
Yeah, and they don't shake this stuff. And so, I mean, you know, maybe they'll join us all this weekend and play well Arkansas. But Arkansas has been played well all year. I know the LSU's played well against Arkansas in the past. But the LSU wants to change any kind of opinions about them right now, which are really rapidly going down the drain. It's going to have to be this weekend. But I think at this point that there's no miracle. There's no we're getting better in May. There's no we're rallying on the stretch. There's none of that. There's none of that because they're not doing that. To me, it looks like you're just playing out the string, honestly.
Talking to Ron Higgins with TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline on RP3 and Company. So, Ron, you don't expect the return or Rally Possum 2.0 to occur up in Fayetteville this weekend?
I don't. I just don't see it. Unless all of a sudden they thought learn how to hit starting pitching or not wait until the sixth inning to start hitting the ball or not have their, you know, have their starting pitching get killed off the bat, you know, for the first 2-3 innings. Last week they got their win because McHale held together for 4 innings and Hess was phenomenal, which we thought he all would be back in a reliever role, which should have happened a long time ago. But didn't, and I think one reason I guess we never thought he had nobody else he could put in a starter. Put the freshman back in. He's hurt right now, but it's a move that probably needed to be made a while back, but probably waited too long on that. So I don't like what I'm seeing from this team. You keep expecting them to turn around and be consistent about the turnaround, and they don't do it. I don't think they're capable of doing it.
Ron, you mentioned, you know, a very tough Arkansas team is kind of licking their chops, so to speak, this weekend. Let's play devil's advocate here. Let's say they drop the series at Arkansas because LSU has struggled on the road this season. Let's say they drop that series. Even if they turn around and let's say beat UNO and sweep Auburn in the final regular series of the year and maybe get to the semifinals of the SEC tournament, do you still think that's not enough for them to host a regional?
No, I don't. I just think I don't care what they say about, you know, the midweek games don't count. If you're looking at a team, and I don't care what league you're in, if you're looking at the team and you go out in midweek games, you're not just losing, you're getting hammered on. You're getting beat, 5, 6, 7, 8 runs in midweek games. I'm not going to give you a regional. You don't deserve one. I don't care what league you're in. And I mean, this is inexcusable. Every midweek game. And listen, there are really good Louisiana teams in Louisiana, all the way from down your way up to Louisiana Tech. There's good baseball. But LSU acts like there's not good baseball, so we're just going to go out there and show up and not be competitive and not give a crap. That's insulting to the teams they play in. insulting to LSU's fans. The people that show up on a midweek night to watch a baseball game, to watch to waste their time for 3 hours to watch their team show up and sleepwalk for 3 hours and get their tail kicked by 11 runs. It's insulting. You know what I mean? And sooner or later, if this keeps repeating itself, no matter how popular LSU baseball is, it's like every other sport and every other program in America in a major college. If fans start showing up, then something's going to change. Now, I don't think they should be. I think he's a really good coach. I think he always has been. But, you know, and maybe this year's just a tough year overall from a personal standpoint for him all the way to the team. But, you know, once we get through this year, something's got to change next year. They got to be considerably better. And honestly, you've got a new AD, and he's not going to, you know, he ain't going to mess around. And believe me, I like Paul Maneri, and I think he's a hell of a coach. He's been one for a long time. But you can't, in this league, you can't have two really kind of off years. In off years, it means you can be a good team, but still not through a regional. And then around here, you know, the bar is raised, and that's unacceptable. It's unacceptable issue. And that's right now it's where they're at. It's kind of unacceptable. And you can't let it linger more than a couple of years.
So with that said, Ron, I will wrap it up with this. Do you believe, I'll ask it this way, do you believe Paul should be on the hot seat, and do you believe that he is?
I believe he's getting there. I mean, I know that I say, well, he's only 3 or 4 out in the SEC West or whatever. He's a tough league, blah, blah, blah. I get that. But it's more than that. It's when you watch a team play the same way over and over again and make the same mistakes and do the same things wrong over and over, that's when you think, I mean, there's something that's not being taught the right way or whatever, or something's not getting through. And so, do I believe he should be in the hot seat? If this year ends like it should be, like it's probably going to end, I think there should be a great concern about that they'll be able to come out next year and play some baseball. Because, again, in this league, LSU, you judge this LSU program like any team judges a great dynasty judges their programs. You can't have more 2 years in a row where things aren't going well, when things are going south on you, when things are, you know, just not, things are being repeated over and over again. It's why Les Miles got fired, okay? Let's face it. Les didn't get fired because he lost to Alabama. Les got fired because he started losing to Ole Miss and Arkansas and Mississippi State. Les got fired because the offense never, ever changed. He saw the same stuff being repeated over and over again. That's how coaches get fired. And I think Paul understands things have to get better. He doesn't like this. And I don't know if this year is going to get any better, but I think next year must be better. Or, you know, I think that you have to make a decision.
Ron, appreciate your time as always, my friend. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Take care. See you.
It's Ron Higgins, Tiger Details. Ron brought the fire on that segment. That's why I love having him on, because he does not hold back. He's going to tell you exactly how he feels. He's going to tell you exactly how it is. And I saw you shaking your head and going, back there, Cody, when Ron was speaking.
I mean, it seemed we've talked to Chris Blair, we've talked to Ron Higgins, and then me and you have chatted amongst ourselves. All three conversations at one point or another have pointed to the leadership on this team. And neither Chris Blair nor Ron Higgins did we bring leadership up to them.
It just naturally came up.
They brought it up. So,
by the way, you can vote on that Twitter poll question. 103.7 The Game. Does LSU have a leadership problem with its baseball team this season? Vote. Tell your friends to vote. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, NBA playoffs. Right here, 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood, but sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig, tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. I do want to squeeze in some NBA playoff talk, but first we're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on a caller. Tim, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, just playing in the rain, man, you know?
I understand. You got to make sure to be safe out there, brother. What's on your mind, my friend?
So I think your boy Ron kind of hit the nail on the head. It's the same way that I've been feeling since the beginning of this year with the talent that LSU has. I think it's the same thing as the Les Miles situation. You have a coach that's basically stuck in his ways, and not saying he's a bad coach by any means, but from the outside looking in, it's like with the talent that you have, they need, I don't want to say they need change, but something different needs to happen, because with the talent that this team has, like, there's no way they should be getting beat by 11 runs to La Tech. So it's just, I don't know. And apparently we have a new AD that's not scared to, like, cut the cord with people. So I think that Manera is probably already on the hot seat. So, but that's just my thought and opinion, man. I'll hang up and listen.
Tim, appreciate the phone call as always. He makes a fair point. Right, the new AD, he's not going to be playing around. Okay, now the new AD said he's backing Will Wade as his coach for right now. You know, look, but this is a guy that made moves when he was at Texas A&M. He fired Kevin Sumlin, a coach that beat Nick Saban in Alabama and won a Heisman Trophy, had a player win a Heisman Trophy under his watch. He fired Kennedy as the basketball coach. This is not a guy that's scared to pull the trigger. Do I think Paul has built up enough goodwill? Absolutely. Could they shake up the staff maybe, bring in a different hitting coach, do something like that? Or maybe at the end of the day, it's up to the players to provide the leadership on the field. I don't know.
I saw on Twitter someone saying that they have an injury problem at LSU, not a leadership problem. It's hard to overcome a lack of depth. You're right, but leadership is what you use to overcome injuries. That whole next man up thing, It only comes if you have someone there to guide the guys that have to step up and be that next man. So yes, the injuries absolutely hurt, but if you had great leadership on this team, I think you could handle the injuries better.
It's a fair point. Good point, Cody Schutz. Good point. We need to go up to break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Kendrick Johnson, our good friend from the Slip and Dip podcast.
Wait, does that mean we're talking fighting?
That's right, UFC 237 preview.
Can't wait to hear you butcher all these names.
Oh, I'm going to go nickname strong. It will be nickname heavy.
Ready
coming
for
up.
The Mad Russian.
Yeah, everyone will be a Mad Russian here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, the Bald Bomber, Raymond Parks III. I'm going to try to make that trending, try to make that a thing now, the Bald Bomber. Uncle Jordy's the Blonde Bomber. I'm going to be the Bald Bomber. We're broadcasting live here from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. one, the Stadium Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. We are efforting the co-host of the Slip and Dip podcast, the one and only Kendrick Johnson. Look, when you're worldwide like he is, you go to Vegas, you go to New York City, you're flying cross-country to cover fights. He was at the Canelo fight over the weekend. My man's worldwide. So sometimes it's difficult to pin him down, so to speak. He's big balling, Kendrick is. So more effort, seeing if we can get Kendrick on. But let's go ahead and let's talk a little fighting. Let's talk about this fight card. Reminder, you can come join me, ya boy, this Saturday night for UFC 237. Watch party at Twin Peaks on Johnston. You know what they do. They got the teeth-chattering beer at 29 degrees on tap. Okay, they're going to have some terrific specials, appetizers, burgers, the whole nine yards. I'll be out there. Come hang out with me. We'll be there from 8 to 10 for the 103.7 The Game watch party. It's the first of three watch parties for this summer that I'll be hosting out there at Twin Peaks on Johnson. So come and join us Saturday night to watch UFC 237.
The last time I was at Twin Peaks for a UFC watch party, we did some March Madness things and stuff. But last time I was there to watch a UFC fight, granted, I guess it was Cormier Miocic won, but the end of that fight, the interior of Twin Peaks looked like that video from when England scored that go-ahead goal in the World Cup a few years ago, and the entire pub went absolutely insane, and beer was flying everywhere, and cups and bottles and all. It looked exactly like that, minus the beer flying. Like, no one threw a beer, but it looked like the jubilation of Acadiana when the fighting spirit of Acadiana took home a second UFC belt was something that I'll never forget. It was great. And Clint, shout out to my man CD for being savvy enough to pull the phone out and get a nice video of that. I'm probably going to ask him to see that later today because I'm thinking about it. Nice. It's a good video of the people jumping up going crazy.
So can we anticipate there to be a packed house once again come August when 103.7 The Game will be having the watch party for the new DC fight?
Knock on wood.
Number two.
Don't jinx that fight. Don't jinx that fight.
Not going to jinx the fight. I expect you to be there.
Oh, for the DC fight, you better believe it. Bet your bottom dollar.
Yes.
I'm not paying for it.
So, yeah. But you need to come check me out. Be having the watch party this Saturday night from 8 to 10. Twin Peaks on Johnston. There could be some other folks that show up. Maybe a world-famous Saturday morning show host right here on 103.7 The Game that goes by CD.
Well, I mean, you must have come way out of pocket for that one. That didn't come cheap. He didn't just go anywhere for nothing. Come on, man.
Pack of Twizzlers and a Diet Pepsi.
A Diet Pepsi. Who drinks Diet? Ugh.
The worst kind of people.
This is coming from a Pepsi drinker. And ugh, Diet Pepsi.
So, Cody, let's talk a little bit about the fight card. Saturday's fight is going to be live from Rio. Okay, so it's going to have, obviously, guys, fighters from there. Okay. The co-main event is Jared Cannonier taking on...
Cannonier?
Is it Cannon?
Cannonier.
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 Yeah, Cannonier.
Cannonier.
Jared Cannonier. He's from the States. He's taking on one of the legends. There was a brief time in UFC where Anderson the Spider Silva was considered the best fighter in the world, yes?
Uh-huh.
Not anymore. He's fallen off a little bit, but he's from Brazil, so he's going to be taking on Cannonier. What do you expect out of that middleweight bout? It's the co-main event, and I know why it's the co-main event, because obviously Spider is on the card. You know, regionally speaking, you want to have someone that the local fans can get behind. Silva is not the fighter that he once was. What do you expect out of this middleweight bout on Saturday night?
I'm hoping it's similar to... I want a show. Okay. I want as close to a WWE UFC fight as we can get. And Anderson Silva is absolutely the kind of guy that can deliver that. Forgive me, I cannot remember who his opponent was in a previous fight of his. Maybe it was this Israel Adesanya guy here. I cannot remember. But they put on a fight where both guys were so technical. There was counters left and right and, you know, throwing punches when guys would leave themselves open. And then in between exchanges of punch, counterpunch, this and that, the two guys would smile at each other. They'd wag their finger at each other. There were a lot of spinning heel kicks, a lot of just fancy trying to show up one another of, look, my jiu-jitsu is better than your jiu-jitsu, and I want to see some showmanship from these two guys, and then someone get knocked out.
Which is interesting because I remember watching Silva during his prime, and I found his fighting to be at times boring. Because sometimes it was a little too technical, and he went through a period there where he was fighting guys, and it wasn't really sensational fighting. I am of the old school variety where I like there to be fisticuffs. I like the brawlers. I'm not going to front. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I can appreciate the guys who are technically sound fighters, but I like guys going in there and mauling each other. Okay, right. I like it when it's more aligned to being a blood sport. That's just me. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just
you
saying
like
it.
You absolutely love a Dustin Poirier fight, then.
Oh,
that's a
yes.
Dustin Poirier fight. Yes. Get out there. I'm going to punch you in the face. You're going to punch me in the face, and we'll see who wins.
Let's see who's left standing. Right. That's
we'll
right.
See who wins.
That's right. That's right.
Here, something cool I'm seeing. 40. Well, let me do the longer one. 5 hours ago on TMZ Sports YouTube, Anderson Silva, a video of him pushing and trying to, I guess, pressure could be a word you could use, Dana White into making one of Silva's final fights, him and Conor. Anderson Silva wants to fight
really?
Conor McGregor. He pushing Dana White to make the Conor McGregor fight happen, according to TMZ Sports.
Oh, now, they're nowhere near weight classes, though.
Yeah, but Conor McGregor's a boxer now.
It's true. What the last time he was in the octagon, what was he?
Oh, well, when he fought Nurmagomedov, he was he a lightweight? I think he was a lightweight. And this is middleweight. Is there
Silva's a middleweight?
Is there something in between lightweight and middleweight? I don't know weight classes well enough, admittedly.
Maybe it's not that much of a difference.
I can check. That's easy enough. While I find this, though, I do want to...
So the Spider wants his final fight for UFC.
Well, one of his final. He didn't necessarily say his last, but in his...
His record of 34-9-1 NC before this Saturday's fight with Cannonier, he wants to fight Conor McGregor. Now,
We're forgetting welterweight.
So welterweight is in between?
Yeah, lightweight is 155 max.
Featherweight's below that.
Yeah,
right.
And middleweight is 185 max. So you're looking at a difference in, you know, 20 pounds.
So Silva is either going to have to, he's probably going to have to be a combination of Silva cutting
could,
and Conor packing on.
They could just make it a welterweight fight and meet in the middle.
Meet in the middle. That'd be the easiest. That'd be the safest on their bodies. That's interesting. That's interesting. So, but before Silva can start pressuring, he may want to take care of Cannonier, who's a good fighter in himself, 11-4.
And where is this UFC pay-per-view event taking place?
Rio.
Rio.
Mm-hmm.
As in Rio de Janeiro?
As in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
Go to Rio. This should be the theme song to UFC 237.
Can Silva come out to that?
I wish he would.
Can Silva come out to that?
Could you imagine Anderson Silva? I go to Rio de Janeiro. That would be great. That'd be great. That would be great. Anytime. Like, it wasn't until you looked at me and at the beginning of the segment and you were like, UFC 237 taking place in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And I was like, I go to Rio.
Very excited.
It is.
So, Cannonier, Silva, that's the co-main event. Another fight that intrigues me on the card is Josie Aldo, former three-time champion. It's a featherweight bout against Alexander Volkanovski. I'm intrigued by that because...
That's the guy that wrote The Nutcracker, right?
It's his great
grandson. Right. Tchaikovsky, Volkanovski, it's all the same.
Yeah, it's all the same.
The Mad Russian.
Yeah, the Mad Russian. It's just the Mad Russian. Josie, I think, still has something in the tank.
I believe, and I think he's trying to put himself in a situation to get another title shot. Alexander, though, he's tough, man. He's 19-1 overall. What do you think about this matchup, Cody? Josie, former three-time champion, do you still feel that he's got something left in the tank like I do, or do you think maybe he's starting to be past his prime?
I mean, it's easy, I think, for someone like me who watches the fight game from afar and really only watches these big events. I don't necessarily see a lot of these guys rise to where they are now. Like, for instance, Jared Cannonier and Alexander Volkanovski. I've heard Volkanovski's name before. This pay-per-view, admittedly for me, is my first time hearing of Jared Cannonier. Now, his rise has obviously been great to get there, and so is Volkanovski's, but I don't know much about these guys, so it's easy for me to say that, yeah, you know what, Jose Aldo is getting older, he's behind his prime, maybe this is going to be the time that, you know, somebody's going to take over, but, I mean, prove it. To be the man, you got to beat the man. And I just don't know enough about Volkanovski to say that he can go out there and do what he needs to do. What I can say about the fight in general, though, is even though it's a featherweight fight, so the guys are smaller than what we were talking about, I think this fight could be more in line of that blood sport type brawl than the middleweight fight. The smaller guys, sometimes they get out there, and, I mean, you start seeing some crazy combinations thrown. So I think this could be one that you see end maybe in more of a gruesome fashion.
Do you think the winner of this fight could get a chance to fight Max Holloway, the reigning featherweight champion?
I don't know. I'd have to look and see at what the UFC rankings are. Not that they mean that much.
Right.
They're kind of like WWE win-loss records. It doesn't really matter. But because they're going to go with the money fight, regardless. I think Aldo would have a better chance just because of the name. I think Max Holloway, Jose Aldo fight buys more than a Holloway Volkanovski fight. But again, I'm not knee deep in the fight game.
Well, you know, the Mad Russian, he would have Putin behind him, and he would force everyone to watch the fight, so that could increase.
Bears on unicycles.
Bears on unicycles.
Everyone.
Everywhere we look, there's bears on unicycles. The main event, though, is for the women's strawweight belt. Rose Namajunas is going to be taking on Jessica. Help me out here, Cody. The last name.
Oh, Jessica. I don't have it in front of me. Andrade. Andrade. Sorry.
Andrade. Rose's nickname is Thug.
Easier.
Which is great for your boy. I like the fact.
By the way, Jose Aldo is the number one contender in the featherweight division right now.
So if he takes that down, it'd be a Holloway fight.
Yeah, Volkanovski's the number four. So this is essentially, this is a number one contender's bout, essentially, because it's the number one guy in the rankings behind Max Holloway against the number four guy. And so I'm going to say the winner of this probably gets a shot.
Gets a shot. I would agree with that. What do you think about the main event, the strawweight bout?
I mean, I love, don't take this the wrong way. I love watching the women go at it because they get crazy, crazy. And then anytime you got a title on the line, when you can go five rounds, you start to see things you don't see, like submissions become more likely into the championship rounds and things. And so I'm looking forward to it. I mean,
Rose has held the belt since November of 2017.
I mean, she's a bad woman.
When your nickname is Thug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to the fight, which is a good thing, because I hate when they co-main event fight cards like this, and then it's obviously one is the main event over the other. You can't say that here. If anything, I would say that this co-main event is bigger than the other co-main event. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. If you're looking for a technical breakdown, I may have to disappoint you.
I'm not looking for a technical
Thank
breakdown.
Thank God.
I, though, look at this card. And this is not a knock to the women's main event, the strawweight bout, or Anderson Silva. The best fight, what really appears to be the marquee match, marquee bout, is the Aldo Volkanovski fight. That's the number one contender versus the number four.
And see, that's the beauty of
and Joshi's still young enough. He's not like Silva. Silva's past his prime.
But I mean, again, I love that because it's a combat sport. It is hand-to-hand, you know. So who knows? You're more excited to see these two guys go at it for number one contendership, and I just happen to be more excited to see these two ladies get in there and beat the hell out of each other for a championship belt, and both fights are probably going to be great.
All three are probably going to be great. And you know what? You can watch them with me, your boy.
Yeah.
RP3.
And Rio, Rio, the crowd there, I guarantee you, in the building at UFC 237 is going to be insane. So the
atmosphere. Is it going to be on the same level as an APW fight at the Rooster Pit in Sunset?
After the first three rows. The first three rows at APW in Sunset cannot be matched. But, you know, from like the fourth row beyond, that'll be how intense UFC 237 will be. God, that's sarcastic.
We love APW.
We do.
We love the Rooster Pit. It's right down the road from my house.
We love professional wrestling.
We love professional wrestling and mixed martial arts here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, we will put a bow on this hump day edition of the show right here on 103.7 The Game.
Up the court, far side. Gets to the basket, kick out Gasol. Lobs to Kawhi Leonard, who lays it in. Kawhi went up. That ball, he caught that ball like Aaron Judge catching a fly ball.
That is a terrible analogy. That's a terrible comparison.
Why is that impressive? why? Kawhi Leonard, he caught that like a fly ball.
Like Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge hits home runs. That's what he does best.
Why am I impressed by that?
Welcome back to RP3 and Company. Closing out the show here on this hump day edition on 103.7 The Game. NBA playoffs going on full force. Last night was not competitive. The Toronto Raptors, as you just heard, Kawhi Leonard, who apparently is Aaron Judge catching fly balls. Someone needs to slap that man for saying that. They easily take out the Philadelphia 76ers. It was a beatdown. First quarter, competitive. After that, not so much. Raptors outscored the 76ers by 20 points in the second quarter alone. They ended up winning 125-89. Toronto now holds a 3-2 lead in the Eastern Conference semifinal series with the 76ers. Joel Embiid appears to be dealing with illness, and Ben Simmons' illness is the I don't have a jump shot flusa.
He's got a case of Lonzo balls.
Oh, he does. He does. The former LSU star did not have a good game last night. Simmons had himself Ben was 3 of 5 from the field. 3 of 5. 3 of 5. You're supposed to be an all-star stud, and you had 3 for 5. Really? 7 points? 7 points in a playoff game? Seven. Jimmy Butler led the 76ers with 22 points, and Embiid only had 13 points. On the other hand, the Raptors were led by Kawhi Leonard, 21 points. They also had Kyle Lowry chip in 19, Green 17. Raptors hold a 3-2 series lead. I think they're going to win this series, and I think they're going to do so in the next game. I think this series is trending towards being over. The other game from last night was the Western Conference semifinals. Denver Nuggets took care of business.
Murray's one-on-one with Curry. Head fake on the three. Now he'll take it. Short, no good. Tipped by Joker. Got his own board. Missed it. Put it back up and in.
Well, he's able to pad his stats anyway.
They demolished the Portland Trail Blazers 124-98. Joker led the way. And now the Nuggets hold a 3-2 series lead in that series. That series could go 7 games, but I'd still lean Denver winning that. Tonight, you got 2 games, Celtics-Bucks. Bucks are going to try to close out the Boston Celtics. They lead that series 3-1, and Warriors and Rockets are tied up 2-2. That is back in Oak Town at the Oracle. Reminder, Ben Love will be live at Mus and Patu this afternoon from 4 to 6, followed by Five Guys Stories and Lies from 6 to 7, and then Houston Astros Royals rubber match live right here on 103.7 The Game. You guys have a terrific day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.